1000 Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 28th of October, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And she's getting good at that.
She is getting very good at that.
You're
and
almost
at 11 minutes
almost
after
a
the hour.
Professional.
Exactly right. You're listening to Soundbites. We'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to lose, all that stuff. Well, the big news this week, I was going to save this because it's also the poll, but
yeah,
I realized if I don't do it.
Yeah, go for it now.
If I don't do it, there's going to be people out there whose heads will explode. So we'll talk about it first. Apple has unleashed Leopard. The fanboys went wild. There are some pretty interesting features in the new version. The one that most interests me is Time Machine. Basically a backup system. You connect an external hard drive, and the system immediately begins backing up to it. Well, it asks you first, and then it backs up to it. Everything. System files, applications, documents, one click, you can restore files. That by itself, very, very nice. Now, of course, you still have to remember to put the external drive somewhere else.
Yeah, that's my only concern with it, is it's intended that your backup drive is continuously on. It's actually a triple redundant backup, but only to one drive. It backs up every hour and keeps your hourly snapshots for 24 hours. It backs up every day and keeps your daily snapshots for a month, and then backs up every month and keeps those until the hard drive is full. You can go back in time as far as you need to, far as you can on your hard drive. But you still want to have an off-site backup of your most critical data.
Right. The real problem is people are going to think of this as adequate.
Right.
And it's
so
not.
If you buy two hard drives and swap between them every week, maybe.
Oh, my God. Maybe.
How much data do you want to lose is how, how much data you're willing to lose, and that's when you swap it.
But the concept is real nice. Eventually, of course, when we all have gigantic pipes to the internet, they'll do this over the internet. It'll be all right then.
And of course, it's still much, much better than what most people are doing right now, which is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll do one backup. 6 months ago, and I've got a backup. Yeah. Well, you've lost everything for the last 6 months.
Yeah, you get to re-enter it.
One thing that I love about this, it has parental controls actually built into the operating system. I love this.
Yeah, the old version had parental controls in that you set up white lists of websites, email recipients, and chat recipients. Leopard takes that a couple of steps farther. You can now put on time limits. So on school nights, they can only be on for this between these hours and between 5 and 7, and they can only do it 2 hours a day. So
and that's
really
based
cool.
on your login, so you have to give everybody their own.
Windows,
right, yeah,
Windows has had that.
Yeah, it has, actually. Well, not the home edition.
No, professional.
It's just interesting because that's where you'd want it.
Right, exactly.
You want to lock your business people out of their own computers when they're supposed to be working.
Right. Then there's a thing called Spaces, which lets you group application into separate, spaces.
Spaces, yeah.
So
virtual desktops.
Well, this is the thing that I have most loved about Linux. Is the multiple desktops that let me keep things separate.
Yeah, it's been
to see that somewhere else.
It's been a common staple of Unix forever, and it's actually surprising that Apple never implemented it.
Right.
It's one of those catch-22s where they don't want to make it too complicated for the novice users, but the power users want it. So there have been third-party options for a long time for multiple desktops, but now you can do it right from the OS.
Right. In fact, I've got on 7.10, Ubuntu 7.10, they've instituted Barrel, so I've got this spinning cube desktop and all that. It actually doesn't have to be a cube and be as many faces as you want it to. Mine is actually in an octagon.
Beware the power of the dodecahedron.
Exactly. So that's nice. It means I can put, certain things on certain pages and keep everything separate. I love being able to
do
that.
Keep your mail and web on one space. You keep your music on another space. Keep your word processing on another space. It's a really nice way for organizing your documents and your applications into separate categories.
Well, it's nice to be able to say, for example, I've got my mail full screen so that I see the username, the subject, the date and time, plus all my folders and things. Without having to scroll back and forth or things get truncated or whatever happens. I don't need that. I like being able to do that, and that Spaces lets you do that. Then there's a thing called Quick Look. Thanks to the cutting-edge folk at Apple, you don't even have to open your files anymore to see what's in them. Brilliant! Sorry. I just am amused by that.
One of the big uses for it is with digital cameras, where your digital camera names all of your files, you know, 101, 002, 003, so you have no idea what they are. So you end up opening each JPEG, or you use the thumbnail preview that the desktop has, or even in Windows, you've got that film strip view. If you want a full screen view of it, you have to open it in your image viewer. Right. So now with Quick Look, you just tap the space bar, and it opens it as big as you want without opening it. So it's a
it's opened it.
It's opened it, but not completely. It hasn't opened.
You either open it or you don't open it. How do you read it without opening it?
It hasn't opened it in another application, which takes time to do. So it opens the image right on your desktop, in as big a screen as you want, and then you can you easily arrow through all of your pictures and find the one you were looking for.
That's wonderful. I'm sorry that the other things impressed me. That was just I thought kind of silly, but okay. I'm sure there's
Nick.
Well, you got 20 Word files. Which one is the right one you wanted to open now?
I have 256 characters to tell me which one is open.
Yeah, but you can only see 20 of them at a time. Maybe unless you make your column wider or have your icon grid spaced apart.
That's why you have multiple desktops.
Yep.
So you can
put them all
big
bigger.
To see everything.
I love the multiple desktop option for the erotic art.
Let's go to our next caller.
Do we even want to go here?
No, let's take a caller.
Is it time? We got time for a caller? Our first caller is John from Byron, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
I got a new Sony digital camera.
Yep.
I got all the software installed with it. And now when I go to download it to the computer, you know, get the files off from it, it's asking me for Macromedia Flash Player. And I went there and installed Adobe Macromedia Flash Player.
Yep.
And it's still not recognizing it.
A couple of things involved here. Is this a still camera or a digital camera? Or a movie camera?
It's a movie camera.
Okay. It sounds like it's saving the files in flash format, which is kind of odd for a video camera.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like the Sony software is old because it's looking for Macromedia Flash. And Adobe bought Macromedia last year, and now it's Adobe Flash. So it could be that the software is looking for two specific a name, or it's looking to see, do you have Flash 6? And not Flash 6
or
better.
That's just lazy program. I'm sorry, but it is.
You could check with Sony's website to see if they have updates to the camera software.
That's probably your best bet, actually.
I did see a site that said old Macromedia Flash Player.
Well, those are the older versions. The current version is 9. So if that software is looking for 6 instead of, say, 6 or better,
if you download and install Firefox, that throws in the Macromedia Flash Player, too.
Yeah, but again, the new one. I think Steve is right about this. It's looking for an old version of the Flash Player. You could download the old version of the Flash Player, but the reason it's old, the reason they've updated it, is because they've added things and they fixed holes in it. There were big security holes in version 6.
Maybe you should look for an update to the software.
Exactly. If you look for an update to the Sony digital movie camera software that you have.
I just had a thought, too.
Wait, Steve had a thought.
No, do you know for sure what format the video is on that camera?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it could be AVC HD, it could be DV. There's a bunch of different video formats. He could have accidentally told the computer to open an MOV with Flash.
Could be.
And not if he doesn't have Flash.
Well, he may have had an old version of Flash, and then when Flash tries to open the MOV, it won't play. So you may need to look at the specs on the camera to see what video format it's actually recording in. Is it a tape, a memory card, or?
It's a tape.
It's a tape, so it's probably DV. So you need a program that can read DV. If you've accidentally told the computer to open a .dv file with Flash, that could be the issue, too.
Yeah. But the first thing I would do is update the software.
Yeah.
See what happens with that.
Go to the Sony website for that.
Yepper.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. I want to apologize that we took the entire segment to talk about Leopard without taking many phone calls.
There was a call there.
There was a call. We had one call.
That wasn't the entire segment.
Right. Right. Which I know porks you off in some deep and unknown way. But when we come back, we'll pick up the rest of the phone calls. We've got a lot more news, I'm sure. Those of you, I'd love to hear from those of you out there who are currently using Leopard, how you like it so far, how you feel about it, what you think, et cetera, et cetera. And then We'll be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more of the greatest computer show in the known universe. You know what it is because you're listening to it now and you enjoy it every time. We are Soundbites, and we are exclusively on 1180 WHAM. It's 21 minutes after the hour, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I do want to tell you that there is more gnashing of teeth after Microsoft last update. Something seems to have gone horribly wrong with an untold number of IT departments on Wednesday after Microsoft installed a resource-hogging search application on machines company-wide, even though administrators had configured systems not to use the program. The admins at my place were in a flap this morning because Windows Desktop Search 3.01 had suddenly started installing itself on desktops throughout the company, a source said. The trouble is that once installed, the indexer kicks in and slows the machines down. The blogosphere is buzzing with similar reports. Apparently, Windows Server Update Services, WSUS, forced Windows Desktop Services, WDS, 3.01, even though administrators had configured their system to install updates only for existing programs and the search program wasn't installed on any machines. Bobby Harder, a project manager for WSUS, denied the WDS update was unauthorized, saying it was applied only if administrators had approved the previous desktop search install in February. The initial update would have been only installed if the update had been either auto or manually approved and if the applicability criteria were met on the client on which the Windows Desktop Services was installed. With the expanded applicability rules and the WSUS default setting to auto-approve new revisions, it may have appeared as if this update was deployed without approval. The initial version of the update would have had to have been approved and the auto-approve revisions option on by default in order for this revision who have also been approved and deployed. Yeah, I don't think so, because I know what happened at my work, and I know what we set and what we don't set. But Microsoft is saying that it was only installed on machines that it was supposed to be installed on. And the revelation that Microsoft is pushing yet more installations not explicitly agreed to by administrators is not likely to sit well.
That's the machines that Microsoft says it's supposed to be installed on, not that the user says it's supposed to be installed on.
Right. It really is a problem. We did have that problem. Machines started slowing down horribly, and it took us a while to figure out what it was. And it's this desktop search indexing in the background. So if that's happened to you, if your machine suddenly got slow for a few days, it's just Microsoft giving you software you should have wanted in the first place, you moron. Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
I got a question. I've been using Firefox since it came out. All of a sudden, now I click on Firefox, and it says, cannot find server. You click the try again button, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. My computer is up to date. It's got that, I do the Tangle and everything. What's the problem?
Well, is this for every place you go to?
Yeah, I can't. Every icon on my desktop, I click on because I use Firefox. And I get the same thing. After maybe half hour or an hour, maybe they'll work. So I went back to IE, which I shouldn't do, but that's the only one that works.
And that does continue to work.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say, it sounds like your internet service is down until the other browser works.
No, it isn't, because if I click try again, Mozilla will bring up the web page eventually. So I can get on the internet with IE, but I can't use it in Mozilla.
I've seen, saw that. How many, 6 months ago, maybe in Safari, and it was a DNS lookup delay. That when you opened your browser and requested an address, it took too much time for the DNS to return the IP. And then if you hit try again, it worked because it had returned it by then.
Yeah, I've been having that problem for some sites, but not all of them.
You may want to check your firewall settings.
I was just about to say that.
And see if somehow Firefox got put on the denied list.
How do I do that?
Depends on which firewall you're running.
I have a Linksys.
No, that's your router. You want to look at the firewall in your computer.
It's a hardware firewall plus that.
Right.
Right, but you want to look at the firewall in your computer, either the Windows firewall or Zone Alarm or a Starro or whatever firewall you're using.
Yeah.
And check the settings there to see if Firefox is on the denied list.
Yeah, I don't.
Or turn it off temporarily, for a few minutes and see if Firefox works.
I don't use Windows Firewall. I just use the Firewall.
All right, then. Here's what you need to do, Linda. Make sure that the Windows Firewall is definitely off, that it didn't turn itself back on. We're talking about Windows here.
Uh-huh.
And then you can check the firewall in your router. If you look in the manual, it will tell you what web address your firewall is at. Then you enter the username and password that you set in your firewall. And it will let you into the web-based firewall services application. And then from there, you can find where the whole router is something you can access via the web.
This is way above me.
Well, then you need to take it to somebody. But the reality is that unless you do this, you're not going to know. You're not going to know how where the problem lies.
One of the things that could have been is that there was a 2.0.0.8 update recently, and you have to, I saw this on a couple of PCs I was working on. You have to reallow it through your firewall because it's a new program,
right?
Accessing the internet, and a couple of machines with zone alarm popped up and said, "Do you want to let Firefox through?" And I'm thinking, "Well, yeah, the old version did. Well, okay, yeah, that's a good thing because." There could be a bad program masquerading as Firefox.exe.
If I uninstalled it and reinstalled it, do you think that would help?
Nope.
No,
because that has nothing to do with your firewall. You need to go into the firewall and say that Firefox, this new version of Firefox, is allowed.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Good luck.
Bye.
Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Well, actually, I was just going to let you know I just installed Leopard.
And what do you think?
First, I couldn't find my internal hard drive to install it.
Okay, that would be a problem.
Yeah, it was a big problem. Had to reboot it. Finally found it. Well, actually, I did repair permissions first. But finally got it installed. Keychains were missing, which is another big problem.
Yeah, I've heard that from a couple of people.
The immediate update came, and you couldn't do anything with it because Time Machine was kicking on. It was a little bit of
On the very first launch, if you've got Time Machine set up, it's going to start a full backup, which is resource intensive.
Yeah.
Spotlight is going to start a full indexing of your hard drive, which is resource intensive. So that that can be an issue. But we've sort of seen this in the past with major updates, is that there's three ways to install the update. You can do an upgrade, which just replaces what you already have. You can do an archive install, which takes the old system away and puts a new system on. Or you can erase the hard drive and install from scratch.
Right.
And most people just do an upgrade. That's the default option. And what can sometimes happen is if you've got little problems in your system you may not have realized yet, or you've upgraded from 10.2 to 10.3 to 10.4, so it's been upgraded all along, that sometimes those problems can now become major problems.
Right. Well, this one came with Tiger in the computer, so I haven't done any upgrades. It had a few glitches. Yeah. I let it run overnight. The next morning, it still had a couple little things. Rebooted, had to find the mail program, couldn't find the passwords. A couple little glitches. But overall, the program is running much faster and very, very clean.
Well, I'm glad that...
Much nicer than the previous edition.
So even with all the glitches, you're happy?
Yeah. Because once it's running a lot faster. Safari's quicker. Programs are popping up sooner.
Great.
So it's not bad.
Excellent. Thank you, Sal.
Sure. Thanks. Bye.
It is kind of interesting that there's an update already for it. On your first install, there was an update.
And that's something to remember, which is make sure you do have updates turned on automatically. Yep. Or if they aren't turned on automatically, update more than once. I have found that if you update and then run update again, you
it
sometimes have another update.
Yeah.
No, it's the main.
I was like that on Windows. I do a fresh XP install, and it finds 3 or 4 updates. When it reboots again, it finds 85 updates.
Yeah.
Now, on the Mac, can you go ahead and, going up to the new OS, get the drivers ahead of time?
Well,
for
third-party programs, definitely. Third-party programs, third-party peripherals, go to those companies' websites and make sure that they're compatible. We haven't heard of any major compatibility issues yet. Generally speaking, the longer it's been since you've done a system install, the sort of less stable is not quite the right word. The more problems you might expect, if you haven't done a system install in a long time. So do some of the standard diagnostics, repair permissions, verify your disk, things like that. The system installer does a verify disk before it starts, but as Sal had mentioned, sometimes the repair permissions, which is also under disk utility, can fix weird little problems you may not have known you're having.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Dave from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
I have two internal hard drives in the machine, and I also have a NAS device that has one internal drive and then two USB drives attached to that. And the reason I do that is for movies. And the thing that I'm trying to do is to make all of those drives, or at least a couple of those drives, look like they're actually one drive. And I don't know what, I'm looking for some sort of file system utility that will help me merge what looks like multiple drives into one so that I can stack all the titles into one space as opposed to having...
Well, but if they're physically different drives, you can't.
Yeah, you can. It's conceptually called RAID, and Windows Disk Management lets you do software RAID of multiple disks. You can't actually merge them together. You have to erase them all and create a RAID.
Yeah, but he's got to have a motherboard that's going to support RAID.
Well, no, soft RAID is built into Windows.
You're talking about doing
a
software
RAID. Right,
one.
There's a hardware RAID. You can actually get a hardware controller card that runs multiple drives as a single. Yeah, they're better that way.
Well, they're more reliable than this. Yeah. I've heard of that software, and I've heard a few folks, again, tried to rely on it, and it was oops.
Yeah, it can slow the machine down a little bit because software is trying to do more things.
Than hardware.
Right. So right now, really the only thing is through the operating system, a software RAID, or go get a different disk controller. Is that what you're
saying? Right, a hardware RAID controller, and then you plug your devices into that hardware RAID controller. Typically, it's an internal IDE or SATA hard drive controller. There are external RAID chassis where it's one chassis that has two or three or four hard drive bays in it,
right?
And then it RAIDs it in hardware, and the computer sees it as one volume.
But your NAS, you should be able to do that. That's the whole point of a NAS.
Well, some of the NASs are only one bay. The cheap home NASs.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, is something that can have two internal drives, and then I can plug in USB drives, and right now, at least, I haven't been able to find anything from them that allows me to make it look like one.
Not with separate drives. If you have two bays, then that's one volume. You try to hang an external drive on it, that has to become another volume.
Right.
So you need a NAS with more bays if you want one volume.
And wouldn't it have to be consistent? He'd have to have those...
Generally speaking, you'd have to have two identical sized drives, two 500s, for example.
Okay.
There's a new RAID standard. It's not quite RAID. It's just a bunch of disks, JBOD, where you can have unlike sizes, so have a 250, a 500, a 160, and the JBOD RAID tells the computer it's one volume of whatever size you've told it.
Again, that's a hardware one, though, right?
Well, that can be done in hardware or software.
Okay.
I know the Mac does JBOD. I don't think Windows does. Vista might.
All right, we have to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 37 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? It's Soundbites, and we are on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right. Verizon Wireless has agreed to pay a penalty and reimburse users who were disconnected for excessive use of a cellular broadband service that was marketed as allowing unlimited use, according to the New York State Attorney General. A 9-month investigation by Attorney General Andrew Cuomo's office found that Verizon Wireless disconnected 13,000 subscribers for exceeding an undisclosed monthly usage cap. Under the settlement, Verizon Wireless will reimburse the terminated subscribers for the cost of the laptop cards or laptop-connected cell phones they bought to use the service. The company put the cost at around $1 million. It will also pay $150,000 in penalties and costs to the states. The prosecutor's office said the company voluntarily stopped disconnecting customers based on their data usage in April. Verizon's user agreement for the broadband access plan prohibits continuous streaming of audio or video and peer-to-peer file sharing, all of which generate heavy traffic. It also reserves the right to disconnect or slow down traffic for anyone using too much data. But since this spring, the cap has been explicit rather than undisclosed, 5 gigabytes of data per month. I can beat that per day. The agreement says that that's not a joke.
We did
the what?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, basically, the problem is that Verizon said this was an unlimited card, and yet there was a limit, and they were cutting people off who reached it.
We didn't really expect you to use unlimited bandwidth.
Yeah, we didn't actually mean unlimited.
Some of the problem is the nebulous definition of bandwidth. because you know with the EVDO card, you know, say it's 600K, you get the whole 600K. That's unlimited.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's the monthly throughput which is limited.
Right.
Which is subtly different than bandwidth.
Right, but that's their that's their deal, and people are seriously porked off. Our next call
is that Paul?
Is Raul? Is that Raul or Paul? My fault, I can't see. From Rochester, welcome. Is it Raul or Paul?
It's Raul.
Raul, my fault, I can't see the page well.
Okay, I got a son that's going to be going to college very soon,
yes.
And I guess I'm as far as my technical capabilities, I'd say I'm average with window operating systems, and I think I can do most of the maintenance requirements needed, like updating viruses, files, and whatnot. But my son, all he does is he chats. He uses computers for word processing, surfing, and whatnot. And I hear a lot of good things about Apple machines, and I may be opening a big debate here between you guys. What do you recommend, Apple or
before
or,
getting into a religious war, what I would say, since he's no, this is serious, and this I think Steve will agree with me too, is you've got to go to the school and see where he's going to get his support and what he's going to need there.
I did that already.
And if they have any specific recommendations.
Pardon?
I did that already, and Dell Systems, their networks.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, they offer free software like, you know, Excel, PowerPoint, whatnot for students from San Geneseo. I know he's not going to be able to maintain his computer, and I hear very little about hacks into Apples and all that stuff. What do you guys
think? Are many fewer hacks into Apples. Two things are important, warranty and service. So what's important is where he gets his machine, what sort of warranty it comes with, and where he can get service. For example, many campuses have Apple repair centers on them. So if they have that, it might behoove him to get a Mac because he can get it repaired right there very quickly.
Okay.
If not, then whatever they support best. But you are right in that, particularly on college campuses, Windows machines are huge targets.
Okay.
And that a Mac or a Linux box would certainly serve him better in terms of that. But in terms of software that he might need to run for specific classes or whatever, that's something he's going to have to talk over with his faculty.
Does he know what type of program he's going into yet?
Well, yeah, he's going to go into right now it's going to be a core science program and more biology, and I think you know, word processing, PowerPoints, Excel spreadsheets, I think that'll suffice. I also worry about all the crap that comes with Windows-based machines when you buy them. It comes a lot of software that you don't use.
Oh, that's
I love those new Dell
not
commercials.
My, not
that
my
Dell,
machine.
Dell has a new line of machines where they specifically say it doesn't come with a lot of crap. That's pretty bad when they have to market it that way.
Raul, is your son using a computer now?
Yeah, he's using a computer now.
And it's Windows or Mac?
It's Windows-based. And that's the thing. I've never used a Mac, and I worry about how much support I can give him if he gets a Mac.
Well, the thing is,
that's
a
legitimate concern, yeah.
He will have a relearning curve if you choose to go Mac. Once you go through the relearning curve, though, you'll find it to be less frustration, in my experience.
Yeah, but that's for his son, but his dad's not going to be able to help him. And again, it goes back to the school. As long as he can get his help and support from the school for different issues that he's going to have, then he's okay.
I think we'll buy it through the school because they offer a 3-year extended warranty.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you get the discounts on the software and everything else.
Yes.
Okay. I've also seen that more science programs are available for Windows machines.
But Apple has made a lot of big inroads into the science programs, especially into biology and genetics and research
Again,
like that.
Again, he's got to check and see
with the school.
Like we've said, you got to check.
Our office is only about 20 minutes, half an hour from SUNY Geneseo. So, we have a lot of contacts down there too.
Check with the school and see what they recommend for the various programs that he's going to take.
Okay,
now, that's the bottom line.
One of the things we see a lot of is that the students will bring their parents into the store and say, "I want to buy the computer," and the kid always wants the biggest, bestest, fastest, most expensive
catalog.
Computer. Yeah. Especially for incoming freshmen, they don't need all of that.
Yeah.
So, we kind of joke about, buy them the basic computer, $1,100 or so gives you a really decent
machine.
Go the
mid-sized car and not the Cadillac.
Right. And then, by the time they graduate, they're going to need a new computer anyway, and they can pay for it then.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's happening in my household.
All right, thank you, Raul. You too. All right, I think we've got time for one more quick call. Our next caller is Bill from Rochester. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Love your show.
Thanks.
Got a It's kind of a strange problem here with a Mac. My father-in-law's got an iMac running OX 3.9. And for some reason, when I removed some software, there was an old Earthlink interface. Once I removed that, all of a sudden now any site that I tried to browse through Safari using HTTP, it will not find the server. If I try and browse sites with HTTPS, they do come up. And there's we're using Roadrunner, so there's no DNS server that I'm supposed to have to enter, and never had one entered before I did this. You think of any ideas why this might be happening?
Well, it almost sounds like there's pieces of the Earthlink software still there, and it's trying to connect through Earthlink. What happens when you try to go to HTTP?
Just get the error message. Safari can't find the server, whatever site it might be. Even typing in, like Apple's IP address, using HTTP, I don't get the site. But if I type in HTTPS and Apple's IP address, part of the page comes up.
Yeah, they don't have a secure server on their main homepage.
Right, right.
Yeah, it almost sounds like there's something of Earthlink left in there. You may want to go into System Preferences and under Network and create a new location. Because sometimes the people have gotten strange things put into the location fields. It may still be trying to find a piece of Earthlink or a piece of Earthlink's DNS. So if you create a new empty location and then set it up for Ethernet and straight DHCP, then it should go directly to Roadrunner and not try to use Earthlink.
Yeah,
it's usually
that.
Something buried in the proxy server settings or the... I see some people will accidentally turn on PPOE because they're used to PPP from the old modem days.
Right.
So some setting somewhere in network preferences, most likely.
Yeah, I'm searching high and low, and I can't find anything that looks remotely troublesome.
Well, try what Steve said, which is just create a new location and then be using that location, and it should work. We have to take a quick break. Thank you very much for your call, Bill. We'll be back again in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who is once again ably offered his time, his services, and his talent to record this show for us for the podcast. And, of course, Jessica Sawyer, who is doing a terrific job back in that booth, smiling and happy, so different from Rob. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It is 50 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian fashion in a semicircle in the floor around the rocking chair, and if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
You know, I almost forgot about it.
Really?
Yeah.
You forgot about people don't forget about Story Hour.
Oh, they love Story Hour. When has that ever been an issue with me?
Right.
Huh? And how many years you've known me?
Yeah, I don't know. I forget the last time you forgot.
Yeah. Same here. Alzheimer's.
Right.
Anyways, and it's funny. We were talking about this before, and we've already had a caller. Boy, I love it when I can just segue right in. Talking about backing up data and retrieving data.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing porks me off more when somebody brings in a hard drive, asks me to retrieve it, and I'm able to retrieve their data, and I tell them the price, and they go, well, I don't want to pay that much. Well, then fine. Don't. But I got to have the data back. Well, then you should have been doing your backups.
Right.
Don't argue when I sit there and I can spend up to 8-10 hours getting your stupid data off of it because you're too damn lazy to back it up. And then argue with me that, oh, I shouldn't have to pay that much. Then, no, you don't. But then try saving it to one of these other companies. And I mean, from what I'm charging you, that's what they charge you just to look at the darn thing. And then they get all upset. And it's like, forget it, folks. You know, I mean, if you don't take the time, don't bitch at me because, you know, I'm getting it off for you. And it takes time. I mean, and this is not fun work. I mean, I've had one drive. I literally had to restart 18 different times after it, because it would heat up so long, I'd have to shut it down, let it cool off, bring it back up. It would run for maybe 5-6 minutes, get some data, it would shut back down. And that was tedious because you had to go back in there and then go searching for all these files because it's not very well organized. when a drive gets scrambled, it's all over the place. So, you know, it's very time and tedious work. So don't complain or shoot the messenger when we sit there and tell you, oh, it's going to cost this or it's going to cost that. If it's really that important to you, back it up.
Especially because, you know, I'm sure you do too. You know, data recovery, several hundred minimum, and it could run into 1,000 if it takes an extra long time.
I had one client wanted just to get one file off of a hard drive.
And that costs more because you got to dig deeper.
Well, I couldn't get it because the drive wouldn't even spin up. If they won't spin up, no, I can't do it. But it wouldn't spin up. So he sent it off to this company to get it. They got him the one file. It cost him over $3,000 to get the file. He got it. And then he had to turn around and send it off because it was his Quicken. Had to then send it off to Intuit for them to unscramble it, which cost him another $2,000 because of what they had to do to unscramble everything and get them back up and running. So there he spent over $5,000, but at least he was able to get it back up and running. And I guarantee you now he does his backup religiously.
Backup. And that was the customer we had this week had downloaded a trial version of a data recovery program. You know, it says, yeah, try this. If it can't find anything, it's probably not gonna. But if it does find something, go ahead and buy it and then get your data back.
Yeah.
So he downloaded the program. It found a couple files. And then he aborted it and brought it into us. And that was the last time the drive ever worked.
Yeah, and that'll happen. If
he'd have continued right then and bought the program himself, he might have gotten some of the files back.
Because once those drives start acting up and they start giving you the noise and everything else, that is definitely the time to say, hey, whoa, stop what you're doing, get your backups and do them, because those noises are never anything good. They're not words of encouragement or clicking because they heard some great tune when you were listening to the radio or your iPod. It's letting you know it's getting ready to go south and it ain't taking you with it on vacation.
I can't tell you the number of times students come with their USB drives or their floppy disks and tell us, oh, my only copy of my thesis is on here. Well, you're an idiot. That's first. I don't even know that you deserve a degree, so I don't know why I'm helping you. But let me get this straight. You wouldn't spend a buck for a floppy or, you know, a few bucks for a USB drive, but I get to let one of my people spend an entire day trying to recover your data?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. We are, apparently we hit one of Uncle Dave's hot buttons there.
Thank you.
We're going to give him an extra dose to settle him down for a few minutes. So rinse out your cocoa mugs. Put your clothes back on.
Back up. There's two types of people, those that have lost data and those that haven't lost data yet.
Exactly. Exactly. We Job will be back on the other side of the news. We're going to spend a couple of minutes with the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really listen to Wham for. We will be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, get on the line. Or join us in the chat room. We're having lots of fun on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 6 minutes after, well, all right, 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
Again. Heard a good one.
Oh, here we go.
I gotta share this one. Since we're demanding show here, guy says to his wife, "Hey, honey, I'm gonna do the wash." Okay.
I've heard this joke. It doesn't end clean. Oh, it's a different one. All right, go ahead.
A different one. I wouldn't tell a dirty joke.
Good.
Hello.
There.
Yeah, right.
She goes, "Okay." So he goes down into the laundry room. He's looking at it. He goes, yells out to her, "Honey, what settings do I use?" He goes, "Well, read the shirt. What does it say?" Wait a minute. All of a sudden, you hear back from the husband, "Oklahoma State."
Very nice. Let's go back to soundbite, shall we? That'll probably be a little better for everybody.
I thought that was kind of cute.
Every week, we do a poll on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week, it was about Skype. 266 of you voted, tying for number 236 in the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you who voted. The question, the choice here was, I use Skype, and it, no thanks was 45% of the votes, closely followed at 36% by, what is this Skype you speak of? 14% of you have tried it, and only 14 of you use it all the time. This week's poll, of course, I almost didn't do this as the poll, because what you're going to get are some Mac fanatics and a whole bunch of people who don't use Macs. But still, the...
it's there. It was begging to.
The poll is OS X Leopard interested? And the choices were, I've got it, I'm getting it, and what am I going to do with it? So far, we have approximately 80 votes, and 80% of you say, what am I going to do with it? 14% of you, including me, say, I'm getting it, and 6% of you say, I've got it. Now, when you're done with that poll, check out the little yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com, where you can enter an opinion. You get 255 characters with which to do that. 14 of you have done so far. Some of them are actually about the question, what is your favorite feature of Leopard? So that's kind of nice. And when you're there, while you're there, take a look around. I've got forums. I put out a newsletter every week with tips and tricks and rants and raves and questions and answers and all kinds of other good stuff. So, and you can join the forum. If you join Ask Nick, you can be a member of all of that stuff. It's a mere $15 a year. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. It's cheap at half the price, whatever that may mean. So then do that and come back and check out our forums here on the Soundbites show. We have links. We have FAQs. And, of course, we've got the world-famous Soundbites shop where you can buy T-shirts and hoodies. It's getting to be that season again. And, yep. Of course, a thong or an apron, all kinds of things you can buy at the Soundbites shop. And join us on the Soundbites chat, of course. You can find that in the links page as well. We've got a bunch of people in the chats right now just having plenty of fun. In the meantime, I think we should probably go back to the phones, and our next caller is Warren in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Warren. What's your question?
I managed to mess up my computer again.
Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
I somehow have locked up my keyboard. Now, down at the bottom of the toolbar, I've got a little icon. It's telling me it's called sticky keys.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know what I did. I know I was doing something, and I held down the shift key, I think, too long.
Yep.
And now it's locked up, and you can't type anything.
Yeah, you can change that in the control panel.
Okay.
In under accessibility.
Okay.
The idea behind this was for people who do not have the use of both hands, using the sticky key, you can turn on shift or control or alt or whatever and use those with one hand more easily. I personally think it's an insane annoyance.
Yeah.
But there it is. And so if you go into the control panel under accessibilities, you can turn off sticky keys.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Mike from Webster, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
I've got 5 Macs at my house. Pretty diehard of them. I love Mac.
Sure.
Like, to a death, they're great. And I'm not really too keen on getting Leopard just yet because, like, so far what I've seen, it's mostly just cosmetic stuff. Like,
sure.
The new features. And I'm wondering if you guys would recommend getting it.
Well, it's always a loaded question. Sure, we'd recommend getting
it. Sure, because you sell it.
Yeah, well, yeah, so we sell it too. But there are some cosmetic features, the new translucent dock, you know, transparent menus, that's kind of neat. But there's a lot of really good usability issues, especially for people who keep a lot of applications open, keep a lot of windows open. The spaces feature to help organize your windows, the quick look feature to find documents you're opening, the time machine automatic backup feature. And then there's new underlying core technologies. The core animation has been added in that, excuse me, that will let programs in the future do more cool and whiz-bang things. A lot of times what we recommend, especially for multi-Mac households, is install it on one, see how well it works before you decide to install it on the other ones. And on business machines and productivity machines and you know, critical machines like that, you should have sort of a test machine you can play with just in case. In fact, Adobe has announced that most of the Adobe suite works okay under Leopard, but a few of the programs don't. So if you're using Adobe CS3, go to Adobe's webpage before you update. But in general, it's pretty good.
All right. One more thing. I've got a rather older Mac. It's one of the eMac. It's 2 years old. And will Leopard run on that?
Well, the Apple specifications were finally announced a couple of weeks ago, so that was a big question all along. It's not as bad as we thought it was going to be. Leopard will still run on PowerPC G4 computer, so it requires a G4 at 867 megahertz or better. which does drop off some of the early Emacs and some of the early Power Mac G4s.
All right.
And some of that is probably just for usability of the eye candy because it is more processor intensive. Now, there is a third-party program called Ex Post Facto, which in the past has allowed you to install the major system upgrades on unsupported computers. They will probably have a version for Leopard. Apple's big concern is that you install Leopard on a really old computer, and it runs really slow, and you don't blame the computer, you blame Apple. So there's sort of an arbitrary limit of 867 megahertz. And that's kind of a weird number that they didn't just pick 800 megahertz instead of 867, which was the next class of machines that came out. So that 867 is a deciding factor on a lot of machines.
All right, cool. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Our next caller is Jeff in Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi, I have a relative who has a small business and does no backups right now. And
relative. It's not you. It's not
friend.
It's a friend of a friend of a neighbor of a friend of somebody's boot black or something.
It's a relative. So she's kind of asked me to come up with a schema for backup.
Mm-hmm.
So she has no redundancy, no server. She has three machines that are like home networked together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm just telling you guys if you have any ideas of, you know, how to economically feasible come up with a backup solution for her.
Are these all Windows machines?
They are all Windows machines.
They are networked?
Yeah.
Western Digital has a great drive out that even comes with the software that you can throw on your network. And it can go, you know, you could time it so it goes from one drive to one machine to the other and back up the various folders to each. Because on this one drive, you'd set up two different folders, say one for one machine, one for the other. And then you set up this routine to back up software, say one night on one machine, the other night the software on the other, and have it constantly rotating. I've even seen folks where they'll get two hard drives and rotate them out. One week, it's one machine to get it off site. So 1 week they're using one hard drive, and then at the end of the week they bring in the other and start the process. So worst case scenario, they're only a couple days. Worst case, absolute worst case, is 1 week off.
And Seagate has similar software.
Most of them.
There's a class of hard drive called network attached storage, or some companies call it an Ethernet disk. It's basically a hard drive with an Ethernet port on it, and it connects directly to your network. And many of those will come with network backup software so that each computer can point to that network hard drive to back itself up to.
Right. And you can back up multiple machines every evening if you want to. You could have every machine back up every night to its specific folder. That may take a little longer, and it does require you leave your machines on overnight. But really, in the long run, it's much better for your data. And the less you back up, the faster it'll happen. So don't bother backing up programs. Since you're not backing up the registry, you're not going to be able to restore them anyway. You're going to have to install them fresh. What you're really concerned with is your data, and in particular, the business's data.
Right.
That should be your number one priority. And if you keep it backed up every night, you're doing okay. Now, that still doesn't address offline storage unless you put in two and take one off-site every other day, but at least it's a start. It's certainly better than what you've got now.
And that's one of the second class of NAS drives that have removable bays, so you can pull one hard drive out and stick another one in.
Also, Gmail is now giving you 4 gig of disk space.
Oh,
so you can mail your stuff to yourself every night if you don't mind the upload time. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 18 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And you know what it is. Say it with me. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, and we were just talking offline about feeds of various broadband applications. Well, for years, broadband wars have largely been fought over download speeds, but Verizon has just thrown down the gauntlet and declared that it's going to fight over upstream speeds, too, and in a big way. How does 20 megabits per second sound? Some residents of New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey who live inside the boundaries of Verizon's Fios network, not us, by the way, will be the first to be able to take advantage of Verizon's new 2020 Fios service. As the name implies, 2020 Fios is a symmetrical 20 megabit per second connection. That means it's 20 megabits up and 20 megabits down. And it's one of the first symmetrical services to target the consumer market. It's available today. It will cost $64.99 per month and will include Verizon's internet security suite and 1 gigabyte of online storage backup. Up to 50 gigabytes can be purchased at competitive rates. Now, if you're able to upload a 20 meg per second and you've got 50 gig of storage up on top, there's your offsite storage.
Yep.
Susan Retta, the company's VP of broadband services, was quick to compare the new plan to cable. For more than a decade, the internet has been defined by how quickly you can download content, Retta said. Our 2020 Fios service changes everything by creating an entirely new category of U.S. broadband where fast means fast in both directions. It's a category of broadband that cable companies have yet to embrace. Although Comcast, Charter, Cox, and other cable ISPs have bumped download speeds in areas where they're facing direct competition from Verizon, they haven't shown much love for upload speeds. These typically remain stuck in the 256K to 1.5 megabit range, even as downloads soar above 10 megabits per second. If Verizon is able to effectively sell the advantage of symmetrical service to Joe Sixpack, cable companies may be forced to widen the upload pipe. Yes, please. Please upload and download. Widen them for me, please.
Well, I know a lot of doctor's offices and that type of people need the upload speed because normally they're doing their processing at the end of the day and they have to upload literally huge file packets.
Yep.
Because they've got all the, that's the way all your claims now when you go to a doctor's office and all that for insurance purposes and that are filed now is through
right
the internet.
And it takes hours to do it now because the upload speeds are so slow.
And in general, people don't need fast up, haven't needed fast upload speeds because the only thing you're uploading is the tiny URL you typed.
Mm-hmm.
But now with home media right. servers and offsite backup, the upload speed is getting more and more necessary.
Yep, and with 20 megabits per second, it means that things like Second Life will actually become bearable at home now.
Well, they're also competing with, the, you know, trying to do them one-up with the competition, Roadrun.
Well, it's also going to allow for more media content for 20 megabit down is significantly faster than, you know, Roadrunner Turbo is 15 megabit, standard Roadrunner is 10 megabit. I mean, let me rephrase that. Up to 15 megabit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And up to 10 megabit. In fact, we just did a test here. We're getting 4 megabit here in downtown Rochester. And we can almost see the Time Warner building out the window.
Right.
So, and it all goes down to location. Some places one is faster than the other.
According
but it's annoying. You know, you said Buffalo's getting Fios. Syracuse already has Fios. But here right. in Rochester, Verizon has never gotten a foothold in the telephone or cable business. You know, they're one of the bigger cell phone companies in the area, but not for telephone or cable.
Right. I'd like to make an open invitation to the folks at Verizon. If you'd like to put Fios 2020 in my home so that I can test it and tell the world about it, I am open to that suggestion. Please make contact with me, Nick at AskNick.com, immediately.
Wasn't there some grandmother in Finland, was it, that's getting 100 gigabit up and down? Because her son works at the equivalent telco and... So he's got to have it for testing and
right.
Hey,
nice work if you can get it.
That was like it was something like 100 gigabit.
Yeah,
not even megabit.
All right, our next caller is Mike in Honeyoy. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi guys. That conversation was pretty exciting because I live where there's nobody around but cows, and we're on dial up. So
right.
Well, the alternative there is cellular broadband or satellite broadband, which can get more expensive, but it's a lot faster than dial up.
Well, the Verizon
EVDO
quasi
card.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
Well, unlimited up to 5 gigabits.
It's unlimited bandwidth, but a throughput cap.
Right.
Actually, that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask. Jumping in from where I was, we were looking at a Mac desktop yesterday, and the major retailer was offering both the 3-year AppleCare and their own extended warranty, and I was wondering what you guys thought, whether that was worth having. So that's kind of
well,
lot of the extended warranties typically work out better for the manufacturer than the
end. Well, and that's the catch-22. You almost hope your computer breaks to justify buying the extended warranty. But you've actually got two issues there. One is the AppleCare extended warranty, which you can use at any Apple dealer virtually anywhere in the world. Although they'd really like you to use your country of origin. And a store's extended warranty typically only works at that store. So if you happen to move or you're in a different city and you don't have that store anymore, then that extended warranty cannot be any good.
Yeah, well, I don't plan to move in the anytime soon. And one of the things that the store extended warranty offered was on-site maintenance.
Yeah, on-site maintenance is always good.
Will this be your first Mac?
Yes, it would.
Let me recommend that you get the AppleCare, because with the AppleCare warranty, you get the right and the privilege to call 1-800-APPLE. That's not really the number, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
And you can actually ask them any question on any part of the hardware, any part of the operating system, and any part of their applications. And they'll walk you through whatever you need to do to get your system doing what you want it to do. And that is a wonderful advantage to have the AppleCare program, especially for your first Mac. I did the same thing, and it's been wonderful.
Okay.
And sort of in general, if anything goes wrong with the computer, it's going to cost more than the AppleCare warranty did to fix it.
Right, and of course, you've got the whole computer built into the back of the screen as well.
Yeah,
so
the all-in-one.
If something fails, the whole thing is...
You know, Apple does offer on-site warranty on their Pro Mac Pro Tower, so that's one interesting issue. Although, generally, I should disclose, you know, in case you don't know, I work for an Apple dealer. I work for an Apple warranty authorized service provider, so we sort of have a background to all of this. We generally don't like to do on-site service, because you go on-site, figure out what the problem is, and you go back to your office and order the part, and you have to go on-site again and replace the part and hope that was the right part, and then you go back to your office and order the next part.
Right.
So it's often annoying to do on-site service.
Okay. So from the sounds, at the very least, the AppleCare has come down as a must, and then maybe not so much so for the store warranty.
Well, in both cases, they're a crapshoot. As Chris says, you're hoping that there will be a problem. So that it's like insurance of any sort.
Right.
You know, you hope you never have to use it, but you hope you have it when you need it.
Exactly.
So there you are.
What would be the sense on the .Mac? They've got their own package you can buy that kind of helps you with questions. If you have the AppleCare, do you really not need the .Mac?
There's a little bit of overlap. The standard Apple warranty gives you 90 days of telephone support. With the AppleCare, you get 3 years of telephone support. Part of the .Mac service are the .Mac discussion groups and support forums where you can post questions for help. But .Mac offers a lot more than that. One of the big things they offer is 10 gigabytes of offline storage. So you can back up your files to Apple, and then you have a second copy and offline backup. And a lot of things is the seamless integration with Apple's media software, so that you can very easily make a photo gallery on the web for people looking at your photos. From the iPhoto application, from the iMovie application, so your photos and movies, you can make really quick and easy web galleries for other people to look at. And they've added some really cool features there where other people can upload their own pictures into your gallery, so that, say, you've got a bunch of people at a soccer game and friends of yours want to give you a picture, they can. And it just makes it a lot easier than emailing pictures back and forth. Okay. And then you get an email address separate from your internet provider. And we were just mentioning, you know, different internet providers with different speeds. One of the annoyances of changing internet providers is your address changes.
Right.
So with the .Mac, you get an address not associated with the internet provider. So, yeah, we generally like to recommend it, especially for novice users who want to share their photos with people, because that's a really neat feature that it has.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you, Mike.
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
I'm replacing my son's computer upstairs. It's a wireless connection to the main computer downstairs. And when I put the slotted card in the back of the computer with a little handle at the antenna, and then install the CD, the computer's not recognizing it. And I'm assuming probably drivers have something to do with that.
What OS are you trying to install this on?
It's a Linksys card and a Linksys router downstairs. That links is wireless through the computers in the house.
Right. But again, this new machine, what operating system does it have on it?
It's the Windows XP.
Windows XP?
Yes.
And it's got Service Pack 2 on it?
Yes.
As long as you've got the card in, matter of fact, usually the minute you boot it up, if it's never had the card in it before, it should say, oh, looking for the drivers, and ask you for them.
Yeah, it's not doing that. That's what
I would double check how that card is seated, because it sounds like you might either have blown the card or it's not seated correctly. Because normally Windows, and and everything else is working fine on Windows, all the applications, then I would definitely check that, because normally when you turn the system on, you've plugged a new card in, that's usually the first thing after Windows gets booting up, says, oh, I found this new hardware and I need the drivers for it. Also, go into the control panel and under the device manager, look and see if it's even seeing the card.
Oh, okay.
And see if it's seeing it there, because there might be a red exclamation mark or a yellow exclamation mark. And from there, you could point it, say, update drivers, and point it to the CD in the CD drive.
And try a couple of simple things. Remove and reseat the card.
Yes.
Just to make sure that you've got the card down tight in the slot. Try a different slot if you have one to see. You know, maybe it's not the card. Maybe it's the slot.
Okay.
All right.
I had one other thing also, and it is I'm possibly doing a family website, you know, where all the relatives from all over the country can log on and see what's going on.
Start with looking
at that.
If you're going to create your own website, then you need to get your own domain name, and you can do that through any one of a dozen places. CLSS is one of the best places I've ever heard of. It's CLSS.com. CLSS.com. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer. I almost yelled Rob Rinkin's name again.
Oh!
And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Rob, as you know, is
one step ahead of the law.
One step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. He'll be hopefully back soon. I'm Nick Francesco, 35 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 39 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. A significant number of Mac owners upgrading to Leopard on Friday reported that after installing the new operating system, their machines locked up, showing only an interminable and very Windows-like blue screen of death. Easily the heaviest traffic threat on the Leopard support forums as of late Friday, installation appears stuck on a plain blue screen. Told how a successful Leopard installation using the default upgrade button and the required restart, some users' Macs refused to budge from the blue screen, although many gave up after 30 or 60 minutes and rebooted. Others were more patient and waited as long as 6 hours. I feel like a Windows user now, said Doug McIlvain. I have reinstalled, and it has been sitting there with a blue screen for 4.5 hours. Almost... See, this is the difference between Mac people and Windows people. Windows people would have gone out to the garage for a sledgehammer long before four and a half hours was over.
We see that a lot in the Mac world, too. You know, people say the computer's frozen and it keeps freezing. Well, no, it's just taking 20 seconds to do something instead of 2 seconds.
Right. Almost everyone who added to the thread, which included more than 200 messages and over 7,400 views by 10:30 p.m. Friday Pacific time, selected the upgrade option. Set as the default, upgrade is the least intrusive of the three install options. Most of your existing settings and applications are left untouched during an upgrade, Apple states in an online support document. In fact, some reports speculated that the glitch might be related to a third-party program that installs a base-level framework that modifies OS X, iOS 10. Frustrated users who reboot to the install disk, then upgraded a second time using the archive and install option, reported success and no lingering blue screen after restart. And they think that that's because it, whatever this framework thing is, of course, gets removed when you do an archive.
Yeah.
For those who have not yet installed Leopard, it appears to be the Unsanity APE, Application Enhancer, that is the culprit. So if you have that installed, which I guess you install yourself since it's a third-party product.
Yeah, it's Application Enhancers. It's system at a system-level Application Enhancer to change the look of your dock, to change the look of your menus. So it's a low-level system hacking tool, and it's become known as Haxies. You generally want to remove things like that before you change your operating system.
Right, right. Apple support said the phones have been ringing nonstop over the problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dick from Spencerport. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Hey, I have a camera card reader on my laptop.
Yes.
It has stopped seeing the card when I put it in. I get a device cannot start code 10 error from the device properties. I've uninstalled it and reinstalled it with the default system, and that hasn't worked.
And this is a built-in one?
This is a built-in one, yes.
You might want to go out and buy a USB one, because 10 watt, you might have bent a pin or when you slide those cards in, there's little pins that it reads.
Right.
especially on the CF cards.
Yeah.
The, what, 24 little tiny
yeah,
pins.
Yeah, you might have bent one. So the best thing to do is just go out for $15 and buy yourself an external USB card reader.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sometimes it is just broken hardware.
Yeah, I ran into that down in the fire department. They were wondering why they were trying to hook up a laptop. Is there overhead projector?
Yeah, the card works fine because I can put it in my daughter's laptop.
Yeah,
right.
It's one of the pins inside. I bet you if you open that little door and look inside, you'll probably see one of the pins are that are bent.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. Good luck.
Appreciate it. Okay.
All right, our next caller is Aaron on a cell phone. Welcome, Aaron. What's your question?
Hey, hey guys. Good afternoon. I just wanted to ask you some questions about external hard drives.
Yeah.
I'm a marketing contractor, and I handle a lot of stuff on a laptop. I have a new MacBook Pro. And I'm carrying between $3,000 to $15,000 worth of information on there. So I've been doing the thing where, you know, you back up with CDs. And But I'm not, like, I'm lazy about that because, you know, it's a lot of trouble. So I just feel that I would feel a lot better about it if I was able to dump it all down onto a hard drive when I got home from the office every night and just be able to just, like, put that out of my mind and get that out of the way.
Well, let me just say how refreshing it is to hear someone admit they're lazy about backups. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm glad I put a smile on your face at least today.
You did.
How much data are we talking about?
Well, anywhere from, it's probably no more than 5 gigabytes.
Well, then, yeah, you can get yourself any of the drives out there nowadays. Like I say, there's plenty of them out there that come with the software. You could literally, you know, you get home at night, you hook it up, and just start the procedure, and you go off, have dinner, or whatever.
Okay.
You could consider an 8 gigabyte flash drive for roughly a little under $100. It's might be a little faster. It's smaller. It doesn't take up any energy.
Okay. How about what do you guys think about the last C drive? I've seen a couple.
The C?
Yeah, the C's. Yeah, that's
I got one from Steve, and I couldn't love it more.
That's the drive we saw. They have a couple of different lines. Their Porsche drive is small and light and cheaper. Okay. Their D2 line has faster interfaces on it. It's got a big fan in it for. We were having this argument with a couple of people. We really like the C drives because they have a fan in it to keep it cool. There's another brand of drive out called the G drive from G Technology, G. And one of their big selling points is it doesn't have a fan to keep it quiet. I'd rather have a fan to keep it cool and not break. And the G drives are like $100 more than an equivalent C drive.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad I asked about that. And I've also heard a lot of chatter about the FireWire 800 versus 400. Is there anything really significant about that?
Yeah, FireWire 800 is twice as fast. So if you have FireWire 800 on your computer, and a current MacBook Pro model does, then that's the best way to get interface. Although if you're just doing a backup, it almost doesn't matter because you start a backup and let it run overnight.
Alternately, if you have the USB drive, as Chris said, that's way faster than...
Well, USB 2 is still slower than FireWire 400.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 46 minutes after the hour. You continue, and I'm not entirely certain why, but I'm delighted that you do. You continue to listen to the greatest computer show in the known universe. On the other side of the news, we'll be right back. Who are we? Why, you already know that. We are Soundbites, and we are on 1180, and that is WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 51 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Mars.
Pat's in there, too. Wave, Pat.
Pat! Pat K is in there.
And coming up next, Pat K.
Pat K.
Stay tuned.
You won't really get to talk to. He'll just be pushing buttons for the... Luckily, he's out of view of the cameras, so he can do whatever he wants. Had a muscle spasm there. Italian street gestures. Our next caller is Marcy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marcy. What's your question?
Hi. I don't know. I just sent you two emails with spec links. You know that one laptop per child?
Sure.
Get one thing that's going on?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I was looking at the specs. So I give one and I get one. I don't understand enough about looking at the specs to figure out, is it worth it? You know, I mean, if I get one.
Let me back up a bit. If you all go to laptop.org, this is the infamous $100 laptop that Nicholas Negroponte was doing from MIT. It's actually a $189 laptop because of the cost of the screen, but That's okay. Once there's a billion of them out there. Everybody wants to play with one of these things. And starting on November 12th, they're starting the G1G1 program. It's the give one, get one. You buy two, you get one.
Yep.
So for $400, you get a $280, no, $390, you get a 200, whatever it ends up being.
I figured it'd be interesting for the kids, but I was trying to figure out from the specs, you know, what will we be able to communicate?
Well, it looks like it. It has a lot of interesting features.
It's no gaming machine.
It's not a gaming machine.
No,
it is strictly,
I don't want a game.
Right. But it does have, it does, in terms of communication. Well, let's see. It's a 433 megahertz processor. It's not an Intel processor, so it's actually faster than it sounds.
And current new computer processors are 2,000 megahertz or better?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, you know, it's waiting 99% of the time for you to do something. Mm-hmm. Now it'll be only waiting 80% of the time for you to do something. Yeah, there's an improvement.
Okay.
It seems to be pretty fast. You get, I think, a half a gig of RAM in it. Maybe it's only 256 meg. I don't have all the specs in front of me.
Oh, that's why I sent two links. I don't know if the email will get you fast enough. I did the soundbites link.
Oh, yeah, that'll take a while.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But I know I am on the site. I'm just not paying a lot of attention
Wikipedia
to that.
Wikipedia has got some vast details about specs.
Right.
So those are the ones I was looking at, but I looked at them and said, I haven't a clue. I mean, I don't know. Is there any way, like, if they have information there, put it on a flash drive and plug it into our desktop so that if they do something one place, then it can go transfer to mine, or do we have to do it online? Or
no, you should be able to do all of that you want to. It also has 802.11b and G connectivity, so it'll connect to your local wireless network. It also has a regular Ethernet connection, so you can plug it into a wired network. It has a built-in video camera, 640 by 480 resolution at 30 frames per second.
Yeah, I figured they'd like that.
Yep, so it does all of those things. I am definitely going to buy one, so I'm looking forward to the 12th of November. Remember the 12th of November.
Yeah, I figure it's going to be, I hope the servers are ready for the meltdown.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that, I may not get in to get one until the 14th or 15th, but I'll be trying all the time.
Now, that has no internal hard drive or optical drive, right?
No, it is strictly flash drive. I think it's a 4-gig flash drive.
That's internal.
Right.
Can you put on an external flash?
It's got USB ports.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want to do.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering, like, you don't load software or anything onto it, right?
No, it comes with a whole bunch of stuff. It comes with word processing and spreadsheet and video and web browsing and all of that kind of stuff.
But it's not Windows, so there's going to be a learning curve there.
Well, it's a Linux machine.
It's a Linux machine. Oh,
it's a Linux thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I wasn't sure. I thought, is this, are we talking like software which is compatible with Word and that sort of thing?
Yes. You'll be able to save things in either .doc, which is the standard Word format, or .rtf, which is a universal format that both the Mac and Windows and as well as Linux understand.
Okay, because I figured, like, the kids, if they do, like, their schoolwork and papers, and then they say, well, then how do I print? And I thought, I don't know. I don't know what it can connect to.
This thing also is a mesh computer, so it will connect to other computers locally. But it is also a regular internet thing. So you should be able, if your printer is available to everybody on your network.
No, it's plugged into my hard drive.
Then you'll have to use a USB flash drive.
And then transfer to my desktop and then print it from there.
Right. Or save it.
Or save it. Print it from the flash drive.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering, how practical it would be for us. Because I thought, well, it looks like an interesting idea. Some kid gets a laptop, and rather than me spending $1,500 for a big fancy laptop, they can have a little useful laptop, and I don't have to worry about the game issue.
Right, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And if you go to either laptop.org or laptopgiving.org, laptopgiving.org is mm-hmm. where you get to do the give one, get one program. Mm-hmm. But at one laptop per child, laptop.org, you can see what the various pieces and parts are for the system.
It doesn't say which OS it is using, though. It's interesting.
It's a Windows variant. But if you click on the laptop on that front page, and then you click on software, it'll tell you a little bit about what's available, and you can see a little bit about what's going on there. There are also places all over the network that will are demonstrating.
It's Red Hat Fedora Core 6.
Ah, okay.
There you go. So
I figured this would also be a cool thing, saying, you know, grandparents, hey, why don't you buy the kids a laptop, and you can give money at the same time, do a charitable thing for some kids overseas at the same time.
So well, that's exactly right.
That would be kind of a big plus to say, well, if I can get two different grandparents to each give once, then two kids have laptops.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that interests me about it is that the screen flips around. It's a tablet PC. And it also has software in it, you know, both a text reader and an RSS reader and an Adobe reader. Really? So you can use it as an ebook.
Oh, really?
Which is what really interests me, because it is also waterproof and dirtproof, so you can take it to the beach.
And I understand it's got the screen that you can see in sunlight, which even the fancy laptops don't usually
exactly
have.
You can set it to read in black and white in huge, bright, direct sunlight, or in color if you're back indoors. And, of course, if you're reading outdoors, you only need black and white.
And then what's it like? It's really low power. I like that thing because, like, hate to have the kids always plugged into a wall or going, oh, man, the battery's down or anything like that.
Right.
Part of the reason is it's a 7.5-inch screen. There's no moving hard drive. So they've done a lot of things to reduce the power consumption.
Right.
Well, yeah, I figured, you know, it's cute, it's green, it's small, they'd like it, and that's why I figured. But I wasn't sure if, you know,
how old are your kids?
10 and 12.
You're at the top end of the range. The 7-year-old, definitely. The 12-year-old, probably. And certainly the thought of, you know, having your very own computer.
Yeah, really cool. And and they can do their work on it, you know, in the car or wherever we are.
You may run into the problem of them fighting over it.
Well, that's why we got to get two.
That's how it works. All right, Marcy, when you get it, let me know what you think. We'll start a club.
Oh, there you go.
All right, we have to go. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often next week. I want to thank everyone who did call in. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer for giving of their talent, time, and abilities today. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. I want to thank you all for listening, for spending wasting two solid hours with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.